Yeah, this is Bola Marjanović, and you listen to Step Back.
Yes, the Mavericks, all up by action. Don't do no acting, no Samuel Jackson. Dirk get the ball, you know that it's magic. Post move deadly, yeah, get tragic. Luka with the ball, yeah, get nasty. He'll drop 30, don't gotta ask him.
Luka with the step back 30. Oh, yeah!
Boy, Chris Stapps, looking like Dirk and Nash in the gap. They just want a ring, want to fill the gap. On your team head, I ain't talking hats. Dang, I relax, still at a champ. Defense still coming with the caliber. Flow, the man's the best on the flow. I'm wild, but
how's it going, everybody? Welcome in to another edition of the Math Step Back Podcast. I'm your host, Dalton Trigg. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host and Dallas basketball on SI colleague, Matt Galatson. The Mavs, Matt, they're coming off of a blowout win over the Timberwolves. They gave up too many points, in my opinion, but they also scored 139, so I'm not going to complain too much. But, you know, just if you look back even before the All-Star break, the Mavs are 3-0 with blowout wins in the last three games where Luka and KP played. And they didn't play in that Atlanta game. We'll get into that mess here in a little bit, but that's what I'm looking at right now is the 3-0 record in the last three where those two have played. They've got some really good chemistry going on. KP, he's shown some flashes. Like, he's thrown some really good passes to Luka. Like, not just your average everyday pass, like these one-handed between two defender bounce passes to Luka in stride for a layup. I mean, it's really impressive stuff. And he's scoring better than he was earlier in the season, and Luka's ankles bother him a little bit, but I mean, he's still averaging what he's averaging for the season since he's come back from that last ankle injury. So, I mean, it's good stuff. What do you think so far since Luka came back, how those two have been playing together?
Well, it's nice, isn't it? When your two best players are playing, it's you know, things are a little bit easier. Hawks
loss. That's what
we've
been waiting for.
Yeah, the Hawks loss kind of sticks out because for some reason they both sat when I don't think they should have. I don't think they really have the margin for error with the seeding to afford losses like that down the stretch. But you know, they took it and they made it up on against Minnesota. And I mean, they played great offensively. Rick complained a lot about the defense, especially in the first half. You know, and there was a reason for that. They gave up way too many points, especially in the paint. But, you know, when you're scoring 136, whatever it was, it was, you know, you can afford to give up a few points. And they had 81 in the first half, which is crazy. So, overall, you know, you can't really complain too much. It's nice to see the two of them stepping up. And Tim Hardaway Jr. had another great game. That's two great games in a row. So, things are looking pretty good.
Yeah, and I mean, another good thing about, yeah, they gave up a lot of points in that game, but I think it was 139-123. But, you know, Luka and KP, I don't even think they played in the fourth quarter.
No, they did not. So it was mostly garbage time in the fourth quarter, which was nice. They got some rest.
Right. So in that third quarter, the first half, let's see, it was 81-65 at half. So they didn't play a lot of defense in the first half. But then in the third quarter, they turned it up a notch. And then by the time, you know, it got to the fourth quarter, that's all it took was one quarter of of solid defense. And, you know, that was all she wrote. But, yeah, I mean, this is what we've been waiting for all season. People have been saying, oh, well, you know, Luka's had his really good games. KP's had his. When are they both going to turn it on at the same time? And they're doing that now, and it's like, man, this is exactly what we were hoping for, if not more. And they couldn't be doing it at a better time of the season because we're in the final stretch here. They're currently in that seventh seed spot. But like I mentioned earlier, I tweeted this out earlier, they're closer to the top of the standings than they are, you know, to the eight seed. And we'll get into that a little bit later too.
But hey, this isn't a playoff team, right? We've been getting that in our mention. This isn't a playoff team, right? We've been getting that in our mentions.
Yeah, I mean, the overreactions to some of these losses this season are just crazy. Like, some of Mavs' Twitter just loses their minds.
Well, here's my thing. Here's my thing is I get you still don't need those losses, like I said, because of the standings, and you don't want to play the Clippers in the first round. You don't want to play, hopefully you really don't want to play Denver in the first round either, even though that's better than the Clippers. So you don't need those losses, but this team's making the playoffs, and whoever they play, it's still going to be a good series no matter who they play, because they're going to, you know, their offense, assuming health is where it needs to be, their offense can keep up with anybody. It's just a matter of, you know, the defense and being consistent, and they can make some noise. It's just, you know, you want to try to get high enough in those standings to avoid playing teams like the Clippers, and that's where the Atlanta loss really hurts.
Yeah, and Rick Carlisle, he made it a point during one of these previous games or before the game to talk to the team about the standings, which was reported. That was supposedly the first time all year he's acknowledged the standings and talked to the guys about it. So, I mean, they know the importance of it. And, you know, Houston, they're currently in the fourth seed, and the Mavs are only 2.5 games behind them for home court. And they play the Rockets two more times the rest of this season. So, I mean, with 25 games now?
Yeah, and I think 20. Only 10 at home, which is, I guess, a good thing.
they've been playing better at home lately, though. That's two straight home wins?
Mm-hmm.
Two straight blowout home wins, and like I said, it makes everything so much easier when your two stars are clicking. And, look, I know people can argue whether or not the Mavs should have played Luka and KP in that back-to-back in Atlanta. But the fact of the matter is, even though they didn't play them, the Mavs should have won that game. And they showed you earlier in that game, you know, what the Mavs were thinking. They were up 16 early in that game. And, you know, getting whatever they want. The Hawks are a terrible defensive team. Cam Reddish is probably the only plus defender on that team.
That's saying something, too.
Yeah, yeah, that's saying something, because Cam hasn't been good at much of anything this year. But yeah, I mean, they still should have won that game. I mean, I know they got a really, really crappy call at the end of it, and, you know, maybe if they played Luka and KP, they wouldn't have even been in that situation. But they still should have won that game. And I put that loss on – I think it's more on the players just not – doing their job and closing it out more than it is, you know, the coach holding them out, or, you know, the refs and all that. So that's where I stand on it. That's why I wasn't just, like, outraged by it.
Yeah, the fact of the matter is they took their foot off the gas. Their legs were probably tired due to being the second night of a back-to-back. And
yes.
Atlanta can be a feisty team. You know, they only have, you know, a handful of wins, but they've got some talent. You know, Trae Young can score. John Collins had a great game. You just can't let your foot off the gas like that. And they did, and, you know, you saw the results.
Yeah, and, I mean, just a few games before that, we saw Trae drop 50, and the Hawks beat the Miami Heat. So, I mean, you know, teams can get hot at certain points in the season. And
even the Mavs last year got hot at one point or another in the season. Yeah. They were terrible. So, it happens.
Yeah. Well, and just moving on from that, now we're going to just kind of focus in on the ending of that Hawks game. The Mavs formally filed a protest of that last play. So, basically, Trae Young, he went in for a layup. Dorian Finney-Smith had a great block. It was, I mean, when they showed the replay, it was just an incredible block. And so they blow the whistle, play's dead, and you don't even think about, you know, John Collins. He got that rebound and, you know, put in the layup. Well, after review, they reversed the goaltend. It wasn't a goaltend. They gave Dorian Finney-Smith the block, but they also gave John Collins the layup after they blew the whistle, blew the play dead. So if they call a goaltend, I mean, think about it. If they call a goaltend, that's the call on the floor. Nothing after that goaltend should matter. You know, play stops at that point. So it just baffles me that they let that count. And I think, you know, like I said, I don't blame that play for the Mavs losing. It did rob them of a chance to either send it to overtime or potentially win it. But regardless of that, I do think they have a good point in protesting this. I think it's a lot better of a protest than what we saw the Rockets protest earlier in the season, because that James Harden basket that, you know, the officials didn't count. I think there was still like 7 minutes left in that game or something. So, you know, there was a lot of time to overcome it. So, I don't know. I think they do have a good point. I don't expect the league to do anything with it. But, I mean, what? It's been, let's see, that was Saturday. And here we are on Tuesday and we still haven't heard anything. Are they really thinking about it?
Well, I don't think so. Appeals like this, say the Mavs win the appeal. Are we really expecting them to meet back up and play the last 9.7 seconds of a game?
No. I mean, I don't know. It would be like, unprecedented. Like,
the logistics of that are insane. When are you going to find the time to play the game? I mean, here's the thing. You file the protest not because you think they're going to reverse the call, but so that the NBA is aware that they made a massive mistake and they fix it going forward. Yeah. That's why I think they actually do it. And that's why I think Mark Cuban, who has a history of doing things like this, you know, not necessarily filing right. appeals, but complaining about the refereeing and you know, trying to make a stand about, you know, the state of where the whole NBA is in that regard, and he has to keep doing things like that if he actually wants things to change, and that's what he's doing. And I, you know, he's doing the right thing in that sense.
Yeah, it's not just a one game thing. It's not like Mark Cuban's being a sore loser, and oh, we want to, we're going to protest this, and we definitely want to replay those last 8 seconds. And I mean, it's not about that. The Mavs have had some really, really crappy calls go against them all season in a handful of games. And the one that sticks out the most is that first Lakers game, because out of all of them, that's the one that's a play that should be reviewable, that should be challengeable in the last few minutes of a game, because Dwight Howard absolutely grabbed on to Seth Curry. They mentioned it in that last 2 minutes report the day after that. And it, you know, the missed call led to the Danny Green three that sent it into overtime instead of giving the Mavs the ball back. So that's really frustrating.
Yeah, and then I'm there's sure also the Tim Hardaway Jr. Phantom out of bounds call. That's another thing that,
oh, that was horrible.
You know, I mean, there's so many calls like that that happen. It's seemingly against the Mavericks on a nightly basis, and it's
you know
so
what,
frustrating.
You know what that made me think of when I saw that replay of the Tim Hardaway out of bounds call? It was in the 2014 playoffs when Vince Carter hit that buzzer beating shot to win. Was it Game 3? Yeah, Game 3 to go up 2-1. His ankle or his heel was just as close, if not closer, to that out of bounds line than what Tim Hardaway Jr.'s was in Atlanta the other night. And I was thinking, you know what? What if the refs had called an out of bounds call on that, you know, on that Vince Carter three in that situation in the playoffs before they even had, you know, those kind of reviews? Maybe they could have still reviewed it. I don't know. But I was just thinking, like, man, I think the officiating has just kind of deteriorated year after year. And I don't know why. I mean, I'm sure Mark Cuban has an idea of why, and he wants to fix it. And I, like you said, I think this is just him making an overall statement, like, come on, guys, we got to fix this some way, somehow.
Yeah, and, you know, that call could affect, even though it shouldn't, because they should have won that game, the fact is, based on the fact that they ended up losing, is that call could affect where they are in the playoffs, and it could affect who they match up with, and it could affect how far they progress in the playoffs. And that's absurd, and it's not fair. But what it all comes back to is they shouldn't have given up that lead, and that's why they're in the situation in the first place.
And, I mean, look, I would argue that the Tim Hardaway Jr. out-of-bounds call was probably more important than the what they did at the end when they called the goal 10 and then they ended up reversing it but giving John Collins the basket. Because I think the Mavs were up by, like, I want to say 9 points when Hardaway stepped out of bounds, and he was about to beat his guy off the dribble and probably had a layup when that happened. So you never know. I mean, stuff here and there, it's like the butterfly effect. but I don't know. I don't expect the league to do anything with the last 8-9 seconds of that Mavs-Hawks game, but I don't know. We'll see. Like I said, it's taken them a long time to come up with an answer. The Mavs have a great case. I mean, it's just the fact that once they called the goaltend on the floor, that stops play. You know what I mean? Like, nothing after that, nothing after that matters, because that's where the play stopped. And I don't understand how they were able to gift John Collins that basket, because all the Mavs players stopped playing at that point.
Right. So, and the good thing that comes out of this is that Mark Cuban's going to get fined a boatload of money, but then he's going to he's gonna take that whatever he match gets it. Fined and match it and donate it to charity.
Yes. So everybody wins. We have stuff to write and talk about, and, you know, he gets fined and he helps out a charity. So
right.
But, you know, moving on, we talked about that one Tim Hardaway Jr. play. But just talking about Tim Hardaway Jr. in general, like, he's been amazing this year. And, you know, last year I've talked about it, and I've reminded you and almost everybody about it. But
hey, I'm on your side here.
Yeah, a couple of days after the KP trade, I was just looking at some of his numbers and everything. I was like, you know what? He's going to be really good for this team, because he'll be playing with Luka. Best point guard he's ever played with before now is Jeff Teague in Atlanta when he was younger. And, you know, he was with Atlanta briefly, but he's never been with, like, he's never been with a franchise like the Mavs. And he's never been with a coach like Rick Carlisle, who has helped him a ton this year. And, I mean, sure enough, I mean, he's just killing it. He's shooting 40% from three. I think he's shooting 44, 45% overall. His catch and shoot numbers are up from, let me look this up real quick. Okay, so last season, Tim Hardaway Jr. shot 32% on catch and shoot threes. And he was taking catch and shoot threes at a 29% frequency. This year, he's taking catch and shoot threes at a 40% frequency, and he's shooting 44% on those catch and shoot threes. So, you know, imagine that. You're getting more catch and shoot opportunities because you're getting, you know, wide open looks, great passes from Luka, and, you know, good team basketball, and he's excelling. And it's been great to see. I love it for the guy.
And he's healthy, which helps. He had that foot thing last year that I think was bothering him up into a point, and then it finally just gave out, and that's what happened there.
Was it his foot? I thought it was a shin. Maybe it was his foot.
It was a lower body, whatever.
Okay.
And I think it finally kind of gave out. And, but not only that, I think the coaching staff deserves a lot of credit here too. It's not just him getting better looks. It's they worked with him over the summer, and he worked hard to improve his shot. And, you know, this is now you're seeing the results of it. He's a much better shooter. He's a much better offensive player. He seems more confident. He's taking better looks, and it's one of the more remarkable turnarounds you've seen in a shooter that I can remember. And I know he's probably not going to win it, but he should at least be nominated for Most Improved Player of the Year in the NBA.
And if he's not, absolutely,
then that's a travesty, because he has been amazing this year. And I, you know, I was one of the people at the beginning of the year who was very pessimistic about him. And I have been proven completely wrong. And, you know, this is me, you know, hey, I was wrong. Bad take guy right here. That was my worst take of the year so far.
Yeah, and then, look, I saw this earlier, so I looked it up, and I'm gonna read it off. But right before Christmas, Chuck Cooperstein tweeted out this. He said, Hardaway spoke afterward about how Carlisle worked with him individually on his shot to make some small correction that obviously worked. So, right before Christmas, or early December, whenever it was, where Tim Hardaway Jr. was permanently put into the starting lineup and just has been on fire ever since, they obviously tweaked something and it worked. And you see that a lot with Rick Carlisle. You know, people come in and they may not have the best shooting percentages, but I mean, he works with these guys and he makes it work. It gives me hope for Luka going forward with his 3-point struggles. I think
and
they're
his free
eventually
throw
gonna
struggles.
Yeah. So I mean, I think it's eventually gonna get to a point where Luka's shooting a respectable percentage from three. Like Tim Hardaway, it's not just respectable. He's at elite levels. And it's funny because earlier we were looking at the comparison. I think Josh Bow shared it on Twitter. He tweeted out the comparison between Danny Green and Tim Hardaway Jr. this season. And it's like, wow. Everybody was wanting Danny Green so bad. The Mavs wanted Danny Green so bad. And Tim Hardaway Jr. has been better, far and above better than Danny Green this year. So,
yeah, and I still want Danny Green. I still wanted him at the trade deadline.
Yeah,
but, you know.
I mean, if you had Danny Green coming off your bench, I mean, that's going to help you. So, of course, you want as many of those guys as you can get. But
or even
I mean
even not even off the bench, it you know, he could have started with Tim. I mean, Seth starts with Tim. Anyway, we don't have to go down the rabbit hole of that, but it's he has really stepped up and filled a role that they desperately, desperately needed, and he deserves credit for that.
Yeah. And I mean, look, it's not just his numbers. You know, he's averaging 15, 3 rebounds, 2 assists. He's shooting 44% from the field, almost 41% from three, shooting 7 threes per night. I mean, that's just incredible. But it's not just that, but it's the passion that he plays with. It's the energy boost he brings to the rest of the team. He's kind of like that. It's kind of like a Jason Terry energy. You know, when Jet would do something, you know, really, really good, or hit a big shot or something, he'd turn around and get the crowd hyped and everything. That's what Tim Hardaway Jr. does. And I love seeing it. I'll say this. I knew he would be better with the Mavs. I didn't anticipate that I would love the guy this much. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I mean, now it's got me thinking that, you know, this will roll on into our next point here. What happens with Tim Hardaway Jr. going past this season? Because he's got a player option for this summer, and I'm looking it up now. I think it's for 18.9, so basically $19 million this summer. And I don't know if he opts in at this point, or if he opts out and signs an extension with the Mavs, kind of like what we saw with Dwight Powell last year. I mean, he's been that good. He's been that vital to this team's success that I think we could see something like that this summer. What do you think about that? And if he were to opt out, what's a contract that you would be okay with?
I don't know what I would be okay with. I'm not at the point where I can start thinking about that. But I do know that I want him to opt out and re-sign, and I really don't think I care for how much, because if he's going to keep playing like this, I mean, obviously there's a cap on it, But yeah. I'd be fine keeping him around for what he makes right now.
Because I was about to say, Matt, don't give him the max.
No, but like keeping him around for what he's making right now, I you know, that he's been invaluable.
Yeah, he's living up to it.
Absolutely invaluable. He's living up to the contract, and there's no reason why the exact same thing can't happen for him that happened for Dwight Powell this past summer. And, you know, he could be that fourth, you know, maybe not next year, but he could be that fourth offensive guy if they sign somebody big in the 2021 free agency class. I mean, he's that good right now, and I think he can continue it. It's I've said it five times in this one statement alone, but he's invaluable.
Yeah, and I mean, you said fourth best player. You know, before the season started, or right there at the beginning of the season, it came out, he made that statement that he wanted to kind of be the Michael Finley to Luka and KP's Dirk and Nash thing. And he got a lot of flack for that. But, I mean, the guy has lived up to it, and you have to give him props for that. He's absolutely living up to that comparison. And, I mean, I'm looking at his career earnings. After this season, once he earns the full $18 million for this season, he will have made, let's see, 40, 50, he'll have $58 million in career earnings total. And so, I mean, he can either opt for the $18.9 million next year, or would he rather do like Dwight Powell, you know, opt out and sign something around, say, 3 years, $54 million, which would average out to $18 million a year. You know, maybe have it front-loaded where he makes, you know, the same – what he would have opted in for, he makes next year, and then it decreases, you know, the next couple of years to help the Mavs out with cap flexibility, which doesn't matter as much anyway. But
no, I'm over the whole cap thing.
Yeah, I am too. But just saying, like, I really feel like he would opt out if he knew he had $54 million guaranteed over the next, you know, 3 years. And I don't think he's at a point in his career where he wants to win. He's always wanted to win, but he also had to, you know, secure his money early on. That's what he did with the Knicks, and, you know, it just didn't turn out the way he wanted to. So at this point, I don't think he's just going to, like, say the Kings or the Hawks or somebody comes out and offers him, you know, way more money than what the Mavs would want to offer him. I don't think he would do that. I think he wants to stay in Dallas at this point.
Yeah, I agree. How old is he now? 27? 26, 27?
Tim Hardaway Jr. is 27. He's about to turn 28 in 10 days.
Okay. Well,
no, my math is horrible. 19 days.
Wow. that's a little bit different.
Anyway.
Well, I'd honestly be happy with another, like, I'd be happy with a four-year deal with the fourth year being an option, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I really don't care. I want him back. I never thought I'd be saying that, but, you know.
Well, and the thing is, with guys like this, I mean, we've seen it a lot of times where guys, the further they go into their career, maybe like the longer they stay with the Mavs or something, I could see his shooting staying the way it is, if not, you know, getting a slightly better. I don't know how you can get better than what he's doing this year. He's just been incredible. But, I mean, you have to figure with continuity, playing with Luka, who's going to be around for a long time, KP is going to be around for a long time, and Rick Carlisle is too, you know, working with all of those guys year after year, you have to figure he's going to, you know, continue to get better because he's still in his prime. You could give him a four-year contract that would, you know, take him through his prime years, and I'd be perfectly fine with that. I'd be fine with a four-year deal, even if it's not an option.
Yeah, why not?
But, I mean, just we're going to touch on this before we move on to one of our final points here. But, like you said, I'm so over the projected cap space stuff. You know, it gets brought up every year, and I think I was already kind of out on it before last summer, but then last summer was just the final straw that broke the camel's back when Miami found a way to sign Jimmy Butler to a max contract. At that point, I was like, you know what? This stuff really does not matter.
It doesn't. You can always find a way to get out of it and get somebody if you want them that bad.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not even about the team wanting the player. It's about the player wanting the team, because Jimmy Butler basically just said, I want to go to Miami. I want to be a Miami Heat. And, I mean, once a player says that, I mean, what are you going to do? You know, Philadelphia knew he wasn't going to sign back with them. So, obviously, you have to look at, okay, how do we keep from losing him for nothing? Well, he wants to go to Miami. Let's talk to Miami and see what we can do. That's just how it goes. So, if a player comes out, you know, in 2021, even if the Mavs are capped out, if Giannis Antetokounmpo comes out and says, I want to play with Luka in Dallas, with Luka and KP in Dallas, the Mavs are going to find a way to make that happen. Yeah. And the Bucks would be willing to help them make that happen, because they know Giannis isn't going to sign back with them at that point. Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen. I'm not going to make a prediction, because then I'll jinx it and there won't be any chance of it happening. But you get my point. Like, if the players have full control here, if a player wants to come to Dallas, Dallas will make it happen.
Yeah. I mean, cap space is a myth. You can get the guys that want to come to you as long as it's a legal trade, they'll make it happen.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, who cares? Just get the best team possible and then see what happens in 2021.
Yeah, and look, even if it's not Giannis, I wrote about this recently, and Giannis was the center of that piece, but even if it's not Giannis, the Mavs are set up to do some noise in free agency for the first time in forever, because we've all been kind of scarred by the Mavs' lack of success in free agency since the title run. So for the better part of a decade, they just haven't been able to do anything. But I mean, since that title team was somewhat old, and since then the Mavs really haven't had anything on the roster. They haven't had anything tangible or promising that they could, you know, pitch to free agents. It was always ideas, you know. It was an idea of pairing Chris Paul and Dwight Howard. It was an idea to pair, you know, Mike Conley and Hassan Whiteside at the time.
I'm glad that didn't happen.
You know, it was all an idea. You know, the first time that they thought that they had signed DeAndre Jordan, you know, that roster was just, it was horrible. Like, you know, they tried to pitch something that they didn't really have. It was just all, you know, based on other things going right. Well, now you have Luka, who's about to turn 21. You have KP, he's 24. Both players have yet to hit their prime. They're a ways off from hitting their prime, and they're still amazing. You've got, you know, a lot of depth on team-friendly contracts for the next 3 to 4 years. I mean, they're winning now. They're 12 games above 500. They have a chance to climb even higher in the playoffs, and we can see what they do in the playoffs this year. I mean, just overall, it's a situation that, in my opinion, they haven't had before. I mean, a lot of teams don't have situations like this. I mean, when do you have a 20-year-old that's already an MVP candidate? What I mean? So that's what I'm saying. I know we're all scarred from previous free agency failures, but I mean, it's just not the same situation anymore. And I know a lot of people are going to be like, well, I'll believe it when I see it. And I don't. And you may be one of those people, Matt, but I don't blame people for thinking that way. I'm just saying it's nothing compared to what they had been doing in the past. This is a different situation.
No, you're right. It's a different situation. The Mavericks kind of remind me of Jordan Belfort in the movie Wolf of Wall Street, because, you know, they started off when they were making all of these pitches to, you know, these, you know, selling based on ideas. They were basically trying to sell penny stocks for a lot of money. They were like, hey, look at this shit that we have, but let me get you to invest a lot of money in it. Now it's different. Now they own a Ferrari dealership, and they're just trying to, you know, they're just trying to sell cars for millions of dollars and grow their business because they know it's booming and it's going to get even better. So it's, I mean, that's probably not a great analogy, but it doesn't matter. You get the point.
It's not a magic act.
Yeah, they have something tangible now. They're not selling air, and that's what counts.
And that's the biggest thing, and that's why I'm excited. You know, not just, you know, even this summer, like the Mavs, they've proven that when Luka and KP are healthy this year, they're a really good team. Like, they're probably a top four team in the West if Luka and KP don't go down with their separate injuries. You know, KP having the knee soreness and then Luka spraining his ankle twice. I'm confident in saying, just looking at the separation and, you know, seeds one through where the Mavs at are seven, I'm confident in saying that if those injuries don't happen, the Mavs are a top four seed. Yeah. And if you look at point differential, you know, if you from best point differential to worst in the West, the Mavs are second, only behind the Lakers. So, I mean, they've been really, really good when those two have stayed healthy. And I think other players are going to notice that. And I hope the Mavs do a lot of noise in the playoffs. It really depends on who they get matched up with. We've said it for weeks now. As long as they don't get the Clippers, I think we're good. Not good, but at least, you know, they have a chance of moving past the first round if they don't play the Clippers. But even this next summer, when the biggest free agent available, well, he's not available, Anthony Davis, he'll re-sign with the Lakers, but Bobby Marks of ESPN, he kind of marked this upcoming summer the summer of the mid-level exception. And even if the Mavs go out and get just another quality rotation player on the market, that's going to be huge for them. Because I think it's just going to get better and better with Luka and KP. They're just starting to scratch the surface of their potential together. And then you go into the next summer where Giannis is available, might be available if he doesn't sign an extension this summer. And then you've got guys in a tier below Giannis like Rudy Gobert and Drew Holiday. So, yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
We'll worry about that then.
Yeah, there's a lot of Mavs stuff to be excited about before we start thinking about free agency. We even have the draft. I mean, the people forget the Mavs have their pick. The Mavs actually have a first round pick this year, and they're going to have a really, really good second round pick. So, I mean, if they wanted to, you know, trade up in the draft or something, they could do that. But who knows? Maybe they can swing something for Buddy Hield or Bradley Beal. But anyway, moving on into our last point here, Matt. We've been talking about, or I mentioned earlier, how the Mavs are closer to the top of the West standings than they are to the bottom. And what I meant by that was the Mavs, like I said, they're only 2.5 games behind Houston for home court. They're only 4.5 games behind Denver for the second seed, which is mind-boggling to me. I feel like the parity in the league this year is crazy. It's the bumps in the road that the Mavs have hit this year, it's just, I don't know, for some reason it's just crazy to me that they're only 4.5 behind the 2 seed. But they're 6.5 games up on the Grizzlies, who are in the 8 seed. So,
who are on a big losing streak.
Yeah, they've lost 3 in a row. They're kind of reeling. They lost Brandon Clark the other night to an injury. I think something happened to Jaren Jackson. I'm not sure, but I mean, they might just be running out of steam here.
Which young teams
but
do.
But yeah. So, I mean, everybody, especially after a loss to the Hawks, everybody kind of thinks the sky is falling and everything. But, I mean, look, the Mavs' next 10 games, there's so many winnable games. If they play Luka and KP together and they take care of business, in about 2 to 3 weeks, we could be looking up at the standings and the Mavs being that that fourth spot. So things can change in a hurry. They have to take care of business, and I think they learned a lesson by, you know, sitting Luka and KP in Atlanta.
I agree. that is I know, I mean, we've touched on it already, but that is one of the most mind-boggling decisions. When I read it, I was like, wow, I'm really glad I'm not covering this game tonight, because I would be obnoxious on Twitter.
I think it's more, before the game, and I still understand it, because, I mean, if Luka plays in that game, the last time they played the Hawks, they sat both Luka and KP, and they blew the Hawks out. And they were on pace, and that was on the second night of a back-to-back, too. And they were on pace to do the same exact thing. You know, I just don't think they planned on Dwayne Dedmon knocking out Jalen Brunson on the first play of the game, which I think the Mavs asked for that play to be reviewed, too. It was almost like Dwayne Dedmon was channeling Andrew Bynum from the 2011 playoffs on J.J. Barea. But Brunson ended up separating his shoulder on that play. So I don't think they anticipated that. It still didn't matter. They built a huge lead. They just ran out of gas. And I don't know. They could have played Luka and KP, and it would have been even worse if they had somehow lost that game. I can't even imagine the reaction then. But I think they've kind of learned their lesson, though. You know, if something like that comes up again, and Luka, he has just a sore ankle, if he thinks he can go, I think they'll let him go. And I don't know. They should have taken care of business even without them playing, but I think we'll see more of Luka playing on back-to-backs going forward. I get it with KP because, you know, when he was playing a bunch of back-to-backs earlier in the season, that's when he started having trouble with that knee soreness. And you don't want something to happen to either one of these guys right before the playoffs.
Definitely not. They can't afford that, that's for sure. They need those two guys to be on the floor together.
Yeah. And then last thing here, and then we're going to sign off and look forward to this Mavs-Spurs game on Wednesday night. But this will be the sixth time this season the Mavs will have a chance to go 13 games over 500. They've flirted with it. They've been at 12 games over, but every single time they've lost. They've had the first five chances they've lost, so they're 0-5 when they have a chance to do this. And now they go to San Antonio to play the Spurs. What do you think? I mean, you think they finally get over the hump here?
I do. It seems like they have the Spurs number this year.
Finally, for the first time.
Well, every once in a while you get to beat up your big brother when he has a sore knee. And, you know, that's kind of what they've been doing this year. Maybe the whole Spurs thing is, maybe it's over. Maybe they just need to retool. Who knows? But I think the Mavs have their number, and I do expect them to win on Wednesday night. I think it's going to be close because it's in San Antonio. But
it seems like every time – the Mavs have had the Spurs number overall, but, you know, DeMar DeRozan just mid-ranges the Mavs to death. It seems like he just can't miss when he sees those blue and white jerseys.
Because nobody guards that stuff anymore.
Yeah. So I'm with you. I think they'll finally get over the hump. And like I said, just looking at the remaining schedule, they'll play Miami at Miami, which is on Luka's birthday. Maybe we'll see a special game out of him. Miami, they've got a bunch of injuries on their roster right now, so we'll see who plays in that one. They have a favorable schedule that they can take advantage of. And, I mean, if we get to the end of March and the Mavs are like 20 games over 500, I wouldn't be surprised. So we will see. But anyway, guys, that's going to do it for another episode of the Mavs Step Back Podcast. We appreciate all of you coming in and listening to us every week. Be sure to like, rate, and subscribe on all your favorite platforms. Be sure to go to our YouTube channel and subscribe there. Once we get to 1,000 subs on our YouTube channel, one lucky subscriber will win two tickets to the Mavs home game of their choice. So be sure to do that. Guys, enjoy the Mavs Spurs game tomorrow night, and we'll see you next week. Have a good one.
A lot of times feel like I was on the road to nowhere. Tell me why all these people up in my face acting like I know them. Feeling like Luka Doncic, rookie of the year, I'm the coldest. God speaking through me every single track, prophet like Moses. Asking why I gotta wait till I'm dead to go and get my roses. Feeling like Mavs 2019, grinding, unfocused. I used to go to bed at night, discouraged, so hopeless. Went through the same pain, my friends chose drugs to cope with. Now I'm reading all these hate comments.